So the exploit that I'm about to present, or the attack technique that I'm about to present, is for digital radios. But if you take Orson Welles' 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast transcript, and you read it carefully, you'll see that he used the same trick. He beat me to my exploit by 70 years. I'm Travis Goodspeed. My apologies. I should have, yeah. The neat trick about this exploit is that it allows you to remotely inject a layer one frame. It works rather reliably, and it works, we believe, for every form of unencrypted digital radio through which the packet length is variable, which everything but a garage door supports, and for which the attacker has some way to route a packet over the wireless network. But we're assuming that the attacker is not physically present in the wireless area. So these are physical layer radio exploits in which the attacker has no radio. An attack scenario might be that you would send a packet over the internet up to a geosynchronous satellite and then down to a receiver dish. And the packet will actually change mid-flight and be misinterpreted by the receiving dish as being a different packet. This different packet must be smaller, but the attacker controls every single field of it. So when Mallory attacks Bob, she basically makes a specially crafted string, sends the string over the radio through whatever network. Mallory doesn't control the radio, has zero physical presence, and then as it actually comes out over the radio, it changes into another packet and an exploit can be triggered. And because this is a raw injection, she's able to inject malicious packets of the sort that were found in the month of kernel bugs, which was when quite a few Wi-Fi drivers were attacked by abuse of layer two fields, which at that point in time were very difficult to forage, even if you had a local radio, because of the limitations of the firmware of the wireless access cards. This is research that I did with several neighbors at Dartmouth College, although I'm coming from the University of Pennsylvania. My name is Travis Goodspeed. I did this with Sergey Bratis, Ricky Malguerez, Rebecca Shapiro, and Ryan Spears. Sergey and Rebecca are here. And I'm going to start by showing the packet, and then I'm going to bounce back to an explanation of how it works. And then I'm going to conclude with descriptions of where else you might find this and how an exploit of this, how a vulnerability of the severity could exist in every form of unencrypted wireless for 70 years without being noticed. This is my tricky packet. If you transmit this through a Zigbee or 802.15.4 radio and you packet sniff it, you actually hear one of two packets in reply. Most commonly, you'll see the whole thing, the whole packet with all of its contents. But every now and then, about 1 in 600, 1 in 1,000 times, you see the italicized packet instead. And this is a layer one representation, which is a bit more than anything like TCP dump will show you. Even Zigbee packet sniffers will leave off the preamble and the synchronization field. That's those 4 bytes of zeros and the A7 at the beginning. And you can nest this as deep as you like. You can actually have one of these inside of another, inside of another, inside of another. And it's sort of a gamble as to which of the inner ones will break out, with the outer ones having increasingly greater likelihoods. And the reason I'm doing concrete examples of these injections is because it's important for you to know that this actually works. That when you transmit the packet at the top and then you filter it out so that you're sniffing, not catching that one, these italicized forms here, or not italicized, these highlighted forms here are that packet here, which dropped out and became injected. The trick to this, this explanation came from a lecture entitled Real Men Carry Pink Pagers, and I liked the style of it, and it's the exact same idea that I'm trying to express, so I hope you'll forgive the colorful drawing. This is what a packet looks like. at layer one. Now, parts of this might be part of layer two, but as this goes over the air, the preamble is what's transmitted first. In the case of the prior packet, that was the four zeros, or the four bytes of zeros. And these symbols exist so that the receiver's clock and the transmitter's clock can synchronize with one another. Otherwise, any sort of drift between them would cause symbols to be shifted out, you know, one sample a bit too early, one sample a bit too late. And lacking things like Manchester encoding, that would then cause the packet to be misinterpreted, but in a damaging sort of way. So the longer the packet is, the more likely it is to be dropped, because the more likely the clocks would go out of sync. So the synchronization field runs into a phase lock loop on the receiver, which makes sure that the clocks are the same. It's not actually interpreted as data by the receiver, but it is transmitted as data by the transmitter. So this is an odd situation that only begins to appear as you get to layer one or lower, in that you have a part of the packet that has no actual meaning to the receiver. It exists only for physical convenience. And it's somewhat optional in that if you have a very short packet, you can leave it out. And because the packet is short enough, the clocks might be sufficiently well synchronized by accident that the packet gets through. If you're sending a particularly long packet, it's sometimes advantageous to have a longer preamble to make sure that the clocks are better aligned. This is followed by the synchronization field, and in this case, the A7. It's different for every single protocol. And in some protocols like Bluetooth and the Microsoft wireless keyboards, the synchronization field is actually unique to the socket. And in those cases, our odds jump from 1 in, say, 600 to 1 in 1. We can get a hole-in-one injection for those, because one radio socket won't actually view... We'll get back to that. Now, following the synchronization field is what you would recognize as a layer 2 packet if you do embedded radio work. So if you're running a Zigbee packet sniffer, The things that the packet sniffer delivers to you begin with the length. Or if you have a higher level interface, sometimes the length gets abstracted away and you start with the address. But it's at that point that you begin to recognize the packet if you come from higher level networking. And most importantly, that's the packet as programmers view it. So when a programmer sends his packet, he sends that inner block of data and he expects it to come out the other side. And because of the OSI model's layers of abstractions, he never actually has to care what goes on beneath that. That's the chip designer's responsibility. So going back to our example, I'm going to bounce back and forth between these two a bit. So you have the preamble. That's the four bytes of zeros. More complicated than I thought. Then you've got the A7, which is the synchronization field. This is also called the starter frame delimiter. Every form of radio seems to have its own name for it. Satellite guys have a different name for it. But that synchronization field is the second field, and that once that symbol is recognized by a shift register, you know, the bits or the symbols are ticking in one by one, and then at some point the shift register's output, the parallel output from serial input, when that exactly equals the preamble, it snaps in, and that's where the packet begins. That's where the receiver begins to tick out symbols. The problem is that packets are sometimes damaged, and in radio, they are very frequently damaged. Now, if anything after the length is damaged, or we'll include the length too for this, the packet gets explicitly dropped. By which I mean the checksum doesn't match. The receiver says, if this is a packet, it doesn't make any sense. I can't handle this. And it throws it away. And it'll also add one to your dropped packet counter. But there's another situation in which the symbol error occurs not within the layer 2 body, but within the layer 1 synchronization field, within that sync. In this packet here, if the A7 gets damaged, let's say that comes in as an A6 or an A5, then the recipient doesn't actually know that he's inside of a packet. He keeps pulling symbols out of the air because that's what a radio does, but they don't make any sense. And because there's no sort of frame delimiter, he doesn't know that he's inside of a packet. So if Mallory has put a preamble, you know, these four bytes here, with the same meaning as that, and a sink with the same meaning as that, and a length, which is shorter than the outer length, then this italicized packet is what Bob thinks he received. Because in the OSI model, when you're wrapping these things up, Mallory actually controls the radio symbols that go out on the air after Alice forwards the packet to Bob, even though Mallory doesn't have a radio. She doesn't have any access to a radio. There's been no software bug. There's been no exploit. Mallory doesn't have code execution anywhere. You know, no elevated privileges. All she's doing is sending a UDP packet with a special body, or an HTTP file with an extra body in it. And when and all she's doing is making sure that the radio sounds that go out over the air are a valid radio frame. And whenever Bob implicitly drops the outer packet, he will catch her inner packet and receive it. And all of those tricks I mentioned about the preamble, you know, making them shorter, making them longer, well, if Alice is shortening her preamble for power management reasons, and Mallory increases hers, then she can tilt the clock drift in her own favor. And this works. You know, this is injecting packets. This works not just for Zigbee. This works for satellite communications. We believe that this works for Wi-Fi. This works for 2FSK, 4FSK, all of the PSKs. There are complications to a few of these different radios, but this is portable to almost all of them. And this is a big deal. It means that this layer of encapsulation, this whole philosophy of writing, you know, a higher level packet inside of a lower level packet inside of a lower level packet, of having, you know, one of these nested Russian dolls that just keeps going further and further in. What happens at the bottom? Can you open the innermost doll? Is it empty or is it hidden from you? In the case of software development, and in the case of the tools accessible to those doing security research at the packet and frame level, layer one is something that's just magic. It's something that just gets taken care of for you. And these layers of abstraction accidentally become layers of competence, in that we don't understand the things that are beneath the layers in which we're comfortable working. We're not omniscient. We can't understand all of this at once. We can't possibly build complex systems without these abstractions, without these layers. But if we forget that they're a convenient fiction rather than the physical fact, we make mistakes like this. And we copy mistakes like this. And we copy mistakes like this into textbooks, like that. And these textbooks get copied, and they're used in our classrooms, and then everyone knows that the proper way to implement a radio is to have, you know, a preamble and a sink and the rest, and to encapsulate everything. And a really big problem with it, a problem that was exploited in 1938, keeps staying around, because nobody exploited it between 1938 and 2011. Nobody. And what happens to this encapsulation when you have errors? If you think of a SQL statement running through a web server with perfect escaping, you know, absolutely every symbol is taken out, but you have errors in it. You know, sometimes a bit gets flipped. Then how secure is the web server? SQL injection moves from being impossible to just an exercise in probability. And in our case, the probability wasn't even sufficiently complicated to be worth measuring. We send a few hundred packets and we get through our attack line. Later on, I'll come to a situation in which a proper understanding of the probabilities would be very handy. And that will relate to future work in this field. But when you have corruption in encapsulation, when you have encapsulation in the presence of errors, things leak out and things break out. I mean, this poor guy, you know, this poor organism just happened to have another organism inside of him, and eventually it wanted to get out. These this concept of taking different layers and then plugging them together, trusting the people and the tools that make the lower layers, treating them as black boxes that do what we want, this creates all sorts of problems. Because these layers are not distinct. They're not physically enforced. They're not real. They're a convenient fiction. And so it happens that things get plugged together without understanding the meaning of them. Now, this would never ship as a product, right? But only because it wouldn't get through QA. Only because the customer is going to get it and say, you know, this doesn't work. Right? It's not that nobody ever designs anything like this. Ask the patent office for perpetual motion machines, and they'll show you plenty of machines like this. It's just that products like that don't ship. And in shipping these products, we need them to be just as secure and just as reliable as necessary. The bug earlier, you know, this problem that the starter frame delimiter can get corrupted, and the second starter frame delimiter could be misinterpreted as the beginning of the packet, right? In a natural setting, if you're sending normal, non-malicious traffic, or if your attackers don't understand this attack technique, it's not a problem, right? Because no frame ever gets dropped or corrupted in a way that would allow a new fictitious packet to drop in. You know? Starter frame delimiters do occur in background noise all the time, but that's what the checksum is for. Those false positives get dropped out. And the few that don't can be filtered if they're a problem. Wait a second. So when you have two tools that you do understand, two tools that are separately tested, because that's why we do layers in networking. Okay, these tools were not designed to be plugged together. It's just an accident of their shapes, right? But each one of them does something individually that's useful. And when you take two things that are useful, that you understand, or that you at least understand in isolation, and you compose them into a single product, you might get something that looks more like this. I still wonder when they took the photograph, you know, that if that's a real person with his shoes there, he must be terribly brave. It would be terribly embarrassing, you know, to have in your obituary that you were taking a funny internet photograph about a rake that kills people, and then it falls. Getting back to the technical side of this, you know, making sure I don't miss anything. Right. So a lot of this gets left unexplored, right? Even as an attacker, you want useful tools, you want enough ability to play in an arena in order to get useful results. It's possible that this is why we're getting so few Bluetooth advances lately. There's a whole flurry of activity with like guessing pin numbers and port scanning and stuff. And then about 5 years ago, that sort of stopped. And there have been a couple exceptions since, like Michael Osman's work. But because it's so difficult to inject Bluetooth traffic, and because it's so difficult to sniff Bluetooth traffic, there's such decreased visibility that it's difficult to understand Bluetooth. Right? You have the same problem at the physical layer, in that when attempting to attack a device, or when attempting to explore a device, it's easy to get results at the upper layers because it's easy to sniff them, it's easy to inject them, and having done that, it's easy to understand them. You know? And then we wind up with complicated avenues of research based upon that as the low-hanging fruit gets eliminated. In the case of layer one, that doesn't happen. I don't know of any layer one sniffer on the market except for a couple of software-defined radios. And all of those immediately strip that off and deliver a layer two packet to the user. How do you inject at layer one? A nifty little trick that we found while testing this was that if we changed the start of frame delimiter in the transmitting chip, then we could put whatever layer one frame we wanted after that, and it would be a sort of packet-in-packet injection that always works. And with that, we're able to play with it. And there's all sorts of ways in which you can extend that. You know, we believe that we can do fingerprinting. We believe that we can create a packet that, you know, given control of a radio at layer one, you can transmit such that the eavesdropper sees one thing and the victim sees a different thing because of layer one effects. By ramping up the power and such, if the eavesdropper has better reception, which is quite often the case, then you can make it such that the eavesdropper sees the real start of frame delimiter while the victim does not, and then have the second start of frame delimiter be the checksum of the first packet, right? So, you know, if you've got Mallory and Bob and Eve, you know, as Mallory is sending the malicious packet to Bob, she makes sure that Eve sees the first start of frame delimiter, but Bob does not. Then Eve gets one packet in her log, and Bob gets a different one. And therefore, Bob can be hit by a malicious exploit without Eve ever being the wiser or having any record of it. Now, this is rather easy to port to any form of unencrypted digital radio, as I said before. About the most complicated is Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fi changes data rate up to twice within a packet. It always begins at 1 megabit per second, and then it optionally jumps to 2 megabits for the remainder of the header, and then it jumps up to full rate, or switches to 802.11g for the remainder. So you actually have to do rate correction on the symbols. But that's as bad as wireless gets. I've not found any protocol that has more tricks to it than that, or a bit of whitening, and the whitening isn't that bad. Cryptography fixes this. If you use, say, WEP with a key that you transmit locally to every party, that's absolutely useless for preventing your neighbors from using your Wi-Fi. But it is perfectly sufficient to prevent packet-in-packet exploitation. It might be the case that the proper solution is to encrypt everything, whether or not the cryptography is useful at keeping out a local attacker. This research shows that trusting the attacker with the ability to control the radio symbols that go out on the air, trusting Mallory with the ability to know what her piece of the outer frame will look like as it goes over the air, that is dangerous. That alone. And we might need cryptography in all wireless communications, whether or not it's effective against local attackers. There's reason to believe that wired networks are also vulnerable. As I said, I'm not very good at statistics. You know, I inject my packets and they come through. And because damage is so common in a wireless network, I don't need to be good at statistics to inject these frames. In wired networks, such as Ethernet and fiber, the situation is very different. Because the designer has such tight controls over the actual physical layout of the network, because the designer can make sure that, you know, there's as little noise as possible, and because he needs to do this in order to prevent packets from being damaged and dropped accidentally, wired Ethernet is absurdly reliable. I sent 2 gigabytes over a 100 megabit link, for which I had stripped the one of the wires and cut it. And I took this wire and I held it together just as if I were throwing sparks from a car battery. And I scratched it a little bit and I popped it off, put it back on. You know, as soon as I remove it, the connection's broken. As soon as I put it back together, the connection is repaired. Across 2 gigabytes, I had exactly 1 frame that was dropped explicitly because of corruption. Remember, the recipient only has visibility into the explicitly dropped packets. It's possible that many were implicitly dropped, but not very likely. In order to port this technique to wired networks, it's necessary to either find a source of local noise, You know, perhaps you could find some way to scan a network for the individual link that is least reliable, and then inject your packet there, relying upon the later form to be forwarded within the network. Or, in some cases, it's possible to introduce corruption. One example of this is in an unswitched hub. In an unswitched hub, you have packet collisions. In a packet collision, you know, one party backs off and stops transmitting, but usually the other party continues for the remainder of his packet. And when there's corruption in the first one, it's quite possible that that corruption will hit the start-of-frame delimiter. And then this packet-in-packet technique no longer just breaks every unencrypted wireless network link. It also breaks every unencrypted wired link, meaning that every Ethernet NIC will have to encrypt traffic between itself and its neighbor. Or at the very least, all untrusted communications will have to be encrypted. So if you're running HTTPS, and HTTPS cannot ferry an injection of this sort, supposing that the attacker only controls the file on the server, while HTTP can. If you wrap all of the untrusted sockets, that might be enough. But the really important thing that I want you to get from this is that layer one is exploitable. Not just a little bit, not just occasionally, but it lets you, sitting at home, anywhere in the world, connected to the internet, to remotely inject a packet between a satellite in geosynchronous orbit and a recipient on the ground, without ever having access to a satellite, to a spaceship, or to any of that stuff. And the only thing standing between the present state of this research and wired Ethernet is finding a source of noise and characterizing it, figuring out how things look on the wire sufficiently well to predict them and to damage them. Thank you kindly. Somebody, please, I'm lonely up here. I've been talking to myself for 20 minutes. Thank you kindly, neighbors.
Carl Koscher, University of Washington. So it occurs to me that another possible defense to this is having a sync field that can't actually be replicated by the data bits. So, what was that?
So,
yeah, either that or I have in one case seen, for example, 1.5 width bits used for the sync instead of just normal width bits. And it seems like it would be very hard to replicate those. Have you seen that used in?
I've not. Which protocol uses that?
It's a weird one.
Okay, yeah. So a couple of weird ones, such as Wi-Fi, which is really weird at the lower levels, introduce complications. These complications they can be worked around. For example, if you have, in one system, you know, you've got a 1 megabit version and, let's say, a 6 megabit version, doing, you know, 1/3 width bits in the lower rate, given an injecting platform of the higher rate becomes possible. You can inject between styles of radios. So I have an exploit in the works for the Sony Ericsson phones with Ant Plus radios that's able to inject into a classroom response system. And it's able to do this even though the two radios aren't the same because the PHY layers are sufficiently compatible. The two protocols use entirely different syncs. They use different data rates, but because they're close enough to one another, and actually having different syncs makes it easier because, like I said, I get a hole-in-one every time I get the victim's start of frame delimiter right, because the forwarding node doesn't have the same start of frame delimiter, and the victim will never know that he's inside of a packet. Thank you.
I have
Jordan, and so I'm one of those guys that, that is very ignorant of the lower level, so pardon me if this is a silly question, but it seems like once you become misaligned, can't you keep that misalignment by eating up the next sync using likes? You know, if you did multiple small packets within the encapsulation where you're eating the next sync, and then you continue to sort of stay on that misaligned track, is that not possible because of some other factors? Or
yeah, so in the paper we describe a technique for throwing the inner packets, the pips as we call them, at the end of the longest outer packet we can create. In this way, damage not only in the sync but also in the length field will expose the later region. And you can, of course, throw multiple frames in, so long as you have enough room between them that the buffer can get flushed and the radio doesn't get overwhelmed. But generally, you either get everything on the inside with a slight preference for the ones that are nearer the end of the packet, or you get none of them because the packet is explicitly dropped or is properly received rather than implicitly dropped.
So you can't propagate the error of one misalignment into other packets, I guess, into other correct packets.
I don't know how to do it. Okay. I'm not saying that it's impossible. There is what's called in Ethernet, you have a non-return to zero code. And this is scrambled with a linear feedback shift register, just a really cheap random number generator, to make sure that on the wire you don't have too many zeros in a row. Or it might be too many ones. I'm dyslexic like that. If you do, then there aren't any state transitions. This is like keeping the entire thing as zeros or the entire thing as ones. That actually breaks the synchronization and causes damage later in the frame. But still, in that case, the started frame delimiter is at the beginning of the frame. So unless I can make it carry to the next, that might be a way to break Ethernet. Thank you. Now, if that means that I've broken Ethernet, I owe you considerable thanks. Microphone.
In any case, it's exactly tricks like that that will make for very good fingerprinting primitives. So this is not published yet, but we're working on this.
Yes. Both fingerprinting and injection. Any trick that allows you to violate this fictitious layer model, a useful fiction, but still just a fiction, is valuable for exploitation. So, thank you kindly.